send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free. Analysis and opinion so honest, it's just a matter of time before they get themselves in trouble. Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome to Baseball Central for Tuesday, May 24th. Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker along. The Jays had yesterday off. They will start a three-game series against the Yankees tonight in the Bronx. Nathan Eovaldi on the mound for the Yankees, R.A. Dickey for the Blue Jays. It'd be a bigger contrast in velocities of starting pitchers. First pitch is just after 7 on Sportsnet 590, the Fan Sportsnet Ontario. Jerry Howarth, Joe Siddle, and Mike Wilner call the game. Dan Shulman, Buck Martinez, and Barry Davis handling the TV side. And don't forget, immediately following the game, you can call into the Blue Jays talk with Mike Wilner on Sportsnet 590, the Fan. Little bit of breaking news in the last hour. Not certain it's going to necessarily have a huge impact on the Boston Red Sox. I think they'd probably sort of come to the conclusion that Carson Smith was going to be of limited use this year. But the Red Sox have announced that Carson Smith, who was one of their big relief acquisitions of the offseason, certainly not as big as Craig Kimbrell, but a guy who was being counted on to be a very important part of their middle relief bridge. Carson Smith is done for the year. He'll require Tommy John surgery. Smith missed the start of the season, if you remember, with what the team was calling a flexor strain. Of course, once you hear that, red lights go up. He threw 2 2/3 scoreless innings for the club. Things were obviously not going well. That was obvious. It was taking them a long time to recover from throwing. He had more elbow discomfort, went back to the DL, and he visited Dr. David Olczyk, and the decision was made to replace his ulnar collateral ligament. So there you go. Carson Smith done for the year. The Red Sox, meanwhile, are still tied with the Baltimore Orioles for first place. In the East, they're 27-17. Baltimore's 26-16. New York's 21-22. Toronto's 22-24. Tampa Bay's 20-22. The only reason I'm saying that is, to me, it's still early to look at the standings. But now we're in, Kevin. Now we're into big games against American League East teams. You've got the Yankees for three, and then you got Boston, then you got the Yankees coming in, then you go to Boston. I'm not a big fan of saying this is the big point of the season, because generally there are, from my experience, you find about 14 big points to the season. But I will say this. If you're six games out, as the Blue Jays are right now, you want to win as many of these next few games as possible when the teams are ahead of you.
Yeah, well, I'm going to say that John Gibbons, probably the first six innings of the game, is going to manage that game a lot differently with the big three at the end of the game. You know, basically it's a six-inning game now. When you face the Yankees from the seventh inning on, you got Betances, Chapman, and Miller. You know, the way the Blue Jays are swinging it, probably going to be real hard to score some runs from the sixth inning on. So you're going to see, I think, Gibby managing a little bit differently, doing different things. If he needs to pinch hit for a guy early in the game, I think he's going to do that. I just think those three guys make an opposing manager do things differently the first six innings. And, you know, it's to me, a lot of these games, I think, when you're six back, can you say it's must win? I'm not sure if it's must win, but you're getting closer to the point where, you know, you need to start winning series.
I was going to say
that. How's that?
I don't know if it's must win, but it's probably best not lose. You probably don't want to lose a lot of these games.
Yeah, because you got to figure, you're facing both these teams, Yankee Stadium, you got to score a lot of runs. You're facing the Red Sox, obviously, you're going to have to score a lot of runs. Can the Blue Jays do that? I think that's the big question now is, you know, I think the starting rotation's finally gotten into their groove. They understand what they need to do to get deep in games. The bullpen puts a lot more pressure on your starting rotation, and it gets down to your hitting. Can they hit enough and do enough during the game to take a lot of pressure off their weaknesses? And that's the big question. Can they do that? I'm not sure they can do that. It's better where I think we're going to have to see the next couple of games. It's basically shut up and start doing the thing that you're really, really good at. If we start seeing that, talent's going to take over. If we don't, I think it's going to be a tough road for the Blue Jays.
We're going to be joined, by the way, by Pat Hankin, senior advisor for the Blue Jays. This is a comment from Pete Walker in Arden's Wellings article in Sportsnet.ca. I want to read it to you, Kevin. Get your take on this. It's from Arden's Welling. The Blue Jays bullpen right now, 13 losses, 7 blown saves. And this is Pete Walker talking about the bullpen. And I quote, "At times I think we're settling in and starting to find some roles, and then we seem to take a step back. I'm completely confident in the guys we have, and I still believe we can put this together, match up accordingly, and put them in the best situations to have success. We're just trying to find that mix right now. It's been frustrating. I know that there's a few guys down there that are frustrated with the way things have gone and expect better themselves, and I think they're professionals and they'll find a way to sort this out, but it's been a tough start." And I've got to think for a pitching coach and Dane Johnson, the bullpen coach, and indeed for John Gibbons, mm-hmm. I think they understand that there is not going to be a magic bullet. Maybe Aaron Loop comes back. That's not going to answer all your bullpen problems. Right. It has got to be so frustrating for them to try to piece this thing together. You know, and John Gibbons mentioned last week, you know, well, he was asked in one of his managerial sessions when things aren't going well in the bullpen, okay, when you don't have that guaranteed bridge, what do you do? He said, well, you try to match up. You try to match up. Maybe try to play advantages. Maybe there's some small statistical advantage in a matchup. You play that. That's such a difficult way to manage a team and manage a pitching staff, though, isn't it?
Yeah, Jeff, I'll ask you this. How many good bullpens are in baseball? Can you probably count them on one hand, I would think? If you sat down and really thought about numbers and you know, what guy, if you have a starter that goes six innings, you turn it over to a bullpen the seventh inning, it's over. You know, you could probably count it on one hand.
There are
you know,
few.
Yeah,
it's, few.
There's not a whole lot of them. So, from what you just read there from Pete Walker, that's a nice way of saying we have no idea. It's basically, Well, I know Pete Walker very, very well, and he's one of the nicest people. He would never throw anybody on the bus, and that's a very nice way of him saying we have no clue. Some guys are going to have to step up, or we're going to be in trouble. And you know, to me, it gets down to, you know, you have to get back to your strength, and your strength is obviously hitting, and they're not doing that in key spots. When they start hitting, if they do, that's going to take pressure off everybody. Then every pitch that – every guy that comes in from the sixth inning or the seventh inning or the eighth inning doesn't have to feel like it's the seventh game of the World Series and that one pitch matters as much as it does now. And until they start doing that, it's going to be this, and you're going to hear coaches come out and say basically they're going to sugarcoat things because, you know, they're not going to throw people on the bus. But – It sounds to me like the pitching coach, the hitting coach, John Gibbons, they're all searching. And what's the right answer? I don't think there is one. You know, the one thing you can hang your hat on is Roberto Osuna. And that's the one thing I think that you can still say if we can get it somewhere close to him. Obviously not every day because the kid can't throw every single day, but if we can get it around him and give him an opportunity to come in a game in big spots – if it has to be the eighth inning and not the ninth inning, that's so be it until guys start stepping up and doing what they're supposed to do. It's, you know, it's frustrating. It's, you know, how frustrating it is for us to come on this show and talk about it all the time.
It's frustrating to watch.
100%. Well, how frustrating do you think these guys are trying to coach them through it? And I've always said this, the big leagues is not a coaching league. It's not. Mm-hmm. You should know what you're doing already by the time you get there. It's not a coaching league.
You made that point. You don't get coached up in the big
leagues.
You
do not. So it's more of a – sometimes you got to walk a guy off a cliff every once in a while if you're a hitting coach or a pitching coach. And you know, the last couple of years, Pete Walker's been doing too much of that here with this team. Yes, you know, the starting rotation last year, he did it a lot. We would talk about all the time. He's spending 10, 12 hours a day in the video room trying to figure out what guys are doing. Yeah, I get it. That's what he gets paid to do. But at this level, sometimes guys got to step back and go, hey, what did I do to get here? And until you start doing it consistently and forget about the numbers up until now. Now, to me, the season starts today. What do you think about that? Today it starts. It starts on the hitting side. It starts on the defensive side because now they're not starting to catch the ball like they used to. They're – what are they, the second worst they've made more errors than – Oakland, I think, in the American League. Well, now you're starting to see at bats carrying over to the defensive side. At least that's what I'm seeing. Season starts today.
This is the pitching matchup for the series and for the next series against Boston. Again, weather permitting, and I know that there's going to be big, big crowds here for this homestand. So I want to give people a sense of what they're going to see when the Red Sox come into town. Friday's game will be Joe Kelly against Jay Happ. Saturday, Rick Porcello against Marcus Stroman. Sunday, David Price against R.A. Dickey. At least those are the scheduled starters right now.
Power. That's what it is. You know what you're getting.
R.A. Dickey's next two starts are against Nathan Eovaldi, who throws about 150, and then David Price. Dickey, by the way, R.A. Dickey lifetime at Yankee Stadium. He's had seven starts. He's had pretty good success. He's got a 292 ERA.
He stays away from the right field porch. He knows how to do that. That's a good thing. Keep it in the big part of the field. He does that, he's going to have a chance, but they got to score runs. You know it, and I know it, and everybody else knows
it. Yeah, this is going
to – You go to Yankee Stadium, you got to score a lot of runs. Yeah. The Yankees are going to score runs. They're going to score five or six, seven runs. You got to score more than they do. Can you do that?
Well, I'll tell you what. Be a pretty nice park for Michael Saunders to hit in right now. And, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about – I mean, I got to tell you, Kevin, I was one of the people – when the Jay Bruce deal almost happened, I thought, great, because I thought they're getting Jay Bruce. This is a guy who can be a middle-of-the-order hitter, impactful left-handed bat. They can have him next year as well. Hey, I still take Jay Bruce in my team.
Me too.
But I have to admit, man, I really, really, really underestimated Michael Saunders.
Me too.
I totally underestimated
him. Me too. His approach is good, and when he gets a good pitch, he puts it in play. That's what it's all about, this level. When you have talent, you're here because you have a lot of talent, and your mechanics are up to par. They're better than everybody else's. And when you start putting a lot of balls in play, chances are you're going to get more hits. It's captain obvious. But this is a good place for a lot of people. Edwin, what happens to Edwin on an everyday basis? He gets pitched away. What's the one short part of the Yankee Stadium? Right field
to a righty
hitter.
Go
to there and get some confidence and start hitting the ball to right field. You hit a couple home runs because basically that right field fence is right in front of you. All you got to do is put a good swing on it, and you're going to hit it out because you have power and you have talent. This is a good time for guys to get healthy. That's the old saying. You want to go to certain places and get healthy. Well, why not right now? But they have to do it to me in the first six innings. Because after the sixth inning, when the Yankees have the lead, this game's over. Mm-hmm. Because of the way the Blue Jays are hitting, do they have any chance after the sixth inning? Right now, you would say no. So that's what I said. Gibby's going to have to manage different. They're going to have to go about their pitching different. They're going to have to do everything different. If they have to hit and run, they have to put more pressure on a older defense. You know, you have to do certain things because one team has a strength that's that much better than everybody else's. I expect that to be done this series.
Yeah, the Yankees bullpen presenting a significant issue. Was Aroldis Chapman? He wasn't there when the Jays.
No.
The Jays haven't faced Chapman this year.
No.
They have faced Dylan Betances and Andrew Miller. They have not yet faced Aroldis Chapman.
Well, those three guys have given up 28 hits in 37 innings.
Yeah.
So the chances of you getting hits, you know, Miller's walked one guy and struck out 32 in 17 and two-thirds. That's a batting average against a 177. Chapman's batting average against 143. Betances, 197. This is my point. You know, if ever there was an approach right out the gate, it has to be this series. Or whenever you're facing the Yankees now. Joe Girardi's basically said, this is what I'm going to go to. Mm-hmm. If I'm going to win any games, I'm going to have a chance in the American League East, I have to use my strength. That's these three guys.
What do you think the ceiling is for this Yankees team, Kevin, in this division?
I picked them to be one of the wild card teams just because of their veteran leadership. I think if they start hitting and they shorten the game with these three guys, they got a shot.
Yeah.
Because of the park they play in, you don't have to have a great swing to play in that park and do well because it's short, you know, and almost half of it. So if you think I'm going to go to that one side and have a good approach – and you stay healthy. That's their biggest thing. These guys, two or three of these guys are going to get hot all at the same time because they're veterans. They understand their swing. They know how to do that. When they start doing that and these three guys, the back end of their bullpen, are taking over like they do now and they catch the ball, yeah, they got a shot.
By the way, you may have heard in our update, there was some thought that Alex Rodriguez would come off the disabled list today. We are now led to believe that the Yankees are going to delay that. So Alex Rodriguez, at least tonight, is not expected to be.
And I think the one side of that too is Carlos Beltran's been DH and he's been raking. in that spot. So I'm, you know, sometimes I'm not real sure that because of that reason, you know, Beltran's getting a little old too, getting a little older, and you want to put him in positions to help your team. A-Rod wasn't hitting when he went on the DL. It's they may not be in too big of a hurry.
Right. The Yankees, by the way, going for their sixth win in a row after a sweep of the Oakland Athletics on the weekend. And Nathan Eovaldi is going for his fourth start, his fourth win in as many starts, and in his last outing, May 18th against the Diamondbacks, he retired the last 18 batters he faced in order.
Be interesting to watch him pitch. The last time he was here, he flipped a lot of breaking balls to the Blue Jays. It got
surprised him a little bit. Yeah.
Use it. Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to watch him pitch tonight, how he attacks the Blue Jays hitters, because you don't struggle in the big leagues because you're not hitting a breaking ball. You struggle because you're not hitting a fastball. And the Blue Jays are not consistently doing that 1-9. It'd be interesting to watch a guy that throws 100 if he throws it.
Speaking of pitchers and attacking hitters and things of that nature, Pat Hentgen is a special assistant with the Toronto Blue Jays. He joins us in Baseball Central. Hello, Mr. Hentgen.
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
Hey.
Got to ask you this, Pat. I mean, this team, you know, funny, we talked about this going into the season. I think we all said great offense, defense, great defense. Bullpen should be okay. Starting pitching, we're not so sure about. It's almost like the Blue Jays have flipped the entire equation on its head here. The starting rotation has been so good. At what point does the weakness in the bullpen, all right, I'm going to say the lack of performance by the bullpen, start weighing on the minds of the starting pitchers?
Well, I think it always does, you know, and I remember, yeah, I used to tell myself, well, finish the game. I mean, it sounds easy, but it's not to do that under 125 pitches. You know, it's frustrating as a starting pitcher. You come out of the game, you pitched a good game, and you win in 42, and next thing you know, it's 4-4, and then you end up losing 5-4, and you're just going, oh, man, I was 6 outs away from winning this game. But, you know, I think it's always on your mind as a starting pitcher. I think that the starting pitchers, they have to just focus on their job and realize that it's like an umpire or anything else that's out of your control. Compete your butt off until the manager comes and gets you and cross your fingers while you're in the locker room watching.
Yeah, should there be a limit on Roberto Osuna? We just mentioned the struggles with the bullpen. You know, there's not really a seventh inning guy. There's not an eighth inning guy. We've seen Osuna pitching in the eighth inning more than one time because Gibby has nobody to go to. Should there be limits on him this year, or is he young enough and it doesn't matter? It's basically whenever we need you, that's when you're pitching.
Well, they do such a great job of monitoring the arms and the usage there. I'm not overly worried about that. I would say that Osuna's a great pitcher. I mean, if you got to use him in the eighth inning, do it. I remember when I played, I used to say, why does the closer get all the recognition? And he comes in sometimes, gets 7, 8, 9 with a 3-run lead. I'm like, the guys that pitched in the seventh and eighth inning got the big outs that day, or the starting pitcher in the third inning got the big outs in the game. So for me, I love the fact that teams are starting to, I don't want to say roll the dice, but maybe evolve and start using these guys in these pivotal high leverage innings, as opposed to sitting around and waiting. Remember the one year when we had Hanky, the last 7 games of the year, he didn't get to pitch much. And I remember thinking, man, our best pitcher in the bullpen barely got the pitch. And I'm going back now, guys. I'm talking about like 89 maybe.
Right.
I don't remember what year it was with the Tigers. Maybe it was 87. I can't remember, but the bottom line was our best reliever really very rarely pitched the last week of the year. And that's just the way teams ran their bullpens back then. And I'm loving seeing these guys coming in with the high leverage innings. I mean, I talked about this in the early 90s. We all did when we played.
Yeah, Pat, I think this is a big question that Gibby's having real trouble answering is, how do you get these guys going? You know, Drew Storen was brought here to be the eighth inning guy. Chavez, I think, was brought here to be maybe a long relief, that seventh inning guy. Let's face it, they're not getting it done. Sooner than later, they're going to have to. How, if you're a manager, how do you get them headed in the right direction? Is it just when the situation arises, you have to throw them in? Is that how they're going to go about it?
You know what? I think sometimes just mingling around during the field, going out during BP as the manager, and just walking up to a guy that may be going through a tough time and just, you know, reinforce to him, hey, say, listen, you know, it's going to turn. Your bubblegum card proves that. And it's going to turn. Let's just get back to the basics. let's start focusing on down and away. You know, when in doubt, let's throw down and away. Get your fastball command down and away. I mean, do you see the system here that I'm trying to emulate here? They need to start throwing down and away. And you know, the other day, I think it was Floyd, we tried to go in again, and boom. And then one thing I learned about charting pitches, guys, and it was when I look back on it, it was pretty damn cool. We had to chart the game. They don't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. One of the things I learned was the risk-reward between inside and away. You have zero risk or zero risk. There's so much risk when you go inside compared to going away. Look at Batista's balls. If you look at his spray chart, 75% of his home runs are to left center to the left.
Mm-hmm.
And my point is that these relievers, they're only coming in for one inning. So let's not focus on what the hitter's weakness is. Let's just pitch to our strength, go down and away. When in doubt, down and away. And let's hammer that ball down and away. Another down and away story real quick. B.J. Ryan told me he went 7 times down and away. Didn't matter who the hitter was. The year he had that monster year in Toronto. I said, what do you mean? He said, 7 times, Pat. I figured I could nibble 3 times on the corner before I'd miss 4. And that was the philosophy. And I really think that that's what the relievers need to do, Storrins and some of the guys that have been struggling. They get beat inside a lot, and the starters do too. And we're not the only team. Every team does it.
Sure. Pat, how much of that do you think comes from the fact that we're so focused on velocity in this game right now that I'm not going to say everybody thinks they can throw 100 even when they can't, but, you know, the way the game is pitched now, it's, boy, I got to come in and overpower you, you know, and yeah, down and away sounds great and everything, but man, it's not the same as me just coming in and overpowering you. Do you think that maybe guys get, it's almost an ego thing with a lot of guys that I still got this, boy, I can just get it by this guy. Oh, can't get it by him.
Oh, sure. And not only that, but that's why there's so much volatility in the bullpen. Some of the teams that evaluate pitchers are loving that radar gun, and they realize that he's going to have a good month and he's going to have a bad month, and he's just buckshotting his fastball in there, and he doesn't know where his fastball's going. He comes in trying to throw 100 miles an hour and makes a mistake out over the middle, and boom. You know, give me the guy that can paint his fastball, and that's the guy that's got the good bubblegum card. Mm-hmm. These guys come in, they have 3 good months, then they have a bad month, then they're, you know, like, I don't want to bring up names, but guys have had great seasons as relievers, and then the next year they're in AAA and they can't get anybody out.
Yeah.
And you just go back and watch the video, the guy was lucky for 3 months. People go, how can you be lucky for 3 months? You can be lucky for 3 months in baseball when you're a relief pitcher. You only pitch 7-8 times a month, and you can have some atom balls. You can have 2 outs and throw it right down the middle, and they pop it up. And it's just you get exposed over the long haul year after year. And let's focus more on where the ball's going as opposed to how hard I throw. And a lot of sometimes it's a front office's fault, guys.
That was my next question. This is the big leagues, and the reason why I wasn't in the big leagues as long as I felt like I should have been is because when I got here, I just didn't make the adjustment quick enough. Whenever you say go down and away, to me, when you say that, it just sounds real simple. Why wouldn't they already know you should go down and away in the 7th inning or the 8th inning? To me, is it either the catcher not knowing that you have to go down and away, or is it the pitcher's fault that, hey, okay, if we're going to get beat here, let's do it because the guy's going the other way? Who I guess, is to blame in that? Is it the catcher, or is it the pitcher?
Well, I blame the pitcher just because the catcher suggests. The problem is you have a catcher that has 10 years in with a great reputation and been to All-Stars and playoffs 9 years in a row. And it's not easy to shake off a guy like that, especially for a guy like Vendetti or Girardo or Tapera or any of these other guys that have got less than 2 years in the league. And one of the first things I told guys was, you throw your game here, big man. Don't worry about shaking off. And a lot of pitchers throw sinkers and they throw two-seamers and they think they got to throw it inside all the time to tie up the righties, and you don't want to let them get extended. I get that, but you're coming in for one inning. You need to stay down and away. Every once in a while, buzz a guy up and in for a strike, try to get it up there. That's a whole other issue. It's hard to get a called strike in there, guys. Mm-hmm. You have more freedom for the strike zone from the umpire away as opposed to in. That's another reason why you don't go in as much. But I'm not saying you don't pitch in. I pitched in a lot. I get that. I'm just saying as relievers, we need to focus on down and away. I don't blame the catcher. I blame the pitcher. They can shake.
Well, you know, it's going to be interesting too, Pat, because Major League Baseball is now talking about raising the strike zone, which, you know, is I read someplace yesterday, they said, yeah, you can raise the strike zone 5 feet, lower it 5 feet. Joe West's strike zone is still the strike zone. It's going to be the strike zone this year, next year. But Pat, if they do raise the strike zone, as they're talking about doing right now, How is that going to affect, you know, the process of going down and away?
Are they only bringing up the lower border?
Yeah.
They're not going to bring up the upper one?
Nope, just the lower border.
Well, obviously MLB is trying to score more runs. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yep.
I would say that it's still down and away is still going to be effective, even if they bring it to the top of the knee as opposed to the bottom of the knee. That's always such a hard call. I mean, you could see how catchers, especially Russell, he's good at framing that bottom one.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he might steal some strikes for you over the year. You know, those umpires, it cracks me up. They do such a great job. And for the players to complain, I didn't complain much to the umps because I always felt like it was a hard thing to do. And even with the new strike zone in the box, these guys are right so often. You know, it's just almost bad luck if you're in the box when they make a bad call.
Mm-hmm.
They only do it 4 or 5 times a game. You know, so I don't think it's going to affect the pitchers too much. I think down and away is going to be effective for the next 100 years. It's just a tough pitch to hit. You know, it's so hard to hit the ball down and away.
It's hard to elevate the ball down and away. But I wanted to have this conversation with somebody that knew what they were talking about, and you're the perfect guy because you...
Well, you can't talk to me about it?
Well, no, because you never pitched in the big leagues. This is the one question I wanted to ask. I've been on this show, and obviously we know the issue is the hitting with the Blue Jays. And, you know, you hear Pat and Buck all the time when we'll give a name. Edwin walks to the plate, and you've noticed a pattern here in the big leagues. Is they're trying to make him, as an opposing pitcher, go the other way. And Pat and Buck's always argument is, well, why don't you scoot closer to the plate? And I wanted to ask a pitcher this. What does that do to a pitcher's mindset when you see a guy that, you know, you've game-planned again that originally standing in the back of the bat – the back of the batter's box, and then when he walks to the plate the first at bat and he's closer to the plate, what does that do to you mentally? What does that tell you that you have to do something differently as a pitcher?
Oh, I think he wants it inside more than he does away. I think he's worried about away, so he's got to get out there. But I think those types of guys that crowd the plate like that, they love it inside. They're quick inside. They look inside. You know, Batista, same thing. I don't mean to bring him up, but he's just a great hitter.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he loves that inside pitch. And you know, for me, it's not easy to execute down and away. If a guy cheats in the box like that, I didn't typically look at a whole lot at that. I was more focused, more kind of like Burley. I wanted to try to focus on just hitting the spot. But for me, I don't know. A lot of catchers see that stuff. They'll usually tip it off for you and maybe call a different game. I don't really think it matters to me. I didn't like going inside, back anyway. So for me, if a guy crowds a plate like that, he's looking to cover the inside pitch, even though I might be thinking the opposite, right? It's almost like reverse, like the pool ball, the cue.
that's a great analogy. Mm-hmm. It's only May 24th, but, you know, Aaron Sanchez, we've got a little bit of, there's a body of work here now for this year. How different is the Aaron Sanchez you're seeing now as a starter now compared to when, you know, Aaron came up as a reliever when there was some, or even as a starter? Just how different is he now? How much more advanced is he now compared to, you know, last year?
Oh, his curveball command's a lot better. And, you know, I know he doesn't even need his changeup, but he throws it because it's so darn good, too. So, you know, he's got 3-plus pitches. He's got great body, you know, throws the heck out of it. He's exactly what you drafted. I mean, we drafted him hoping that he'd become this, and he has.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a credit to the development, and it's tip your hat to to Sanchez. I mean, he's just a great pitcher right now on a roll.
Pat, we're going to let you run. It's great to talk to you as always.
Okay, thanks.
Pat Henkin.
He's the best.
He is the best. I don't even know about the title. Is special assistant. No, it's just Pat Henkin.
He's amazing.
And I always tell the story about, and I will tell it all the time because this is the first thing I think of when I think of Pat Henkin. I only covered Pat Henkin's last year here when he came back to Toronto because I was in Montreal for most of his career. But every spring training, I tried to spend time at the minor league camp. I did that when I was in my previous job and in this job. Try to go to the minor league camp at least once, even if it's just for 3 hours, because I think it's if you're a baseball writer, broadcaster, you have to go to the minor league complex. You just have to, because you find stuff out. It's got to be a daily stop. And if you're a fan, it's one of the very best things about being a baseball fan. And it is always interesting seeing Pat when he's out there. And I remember the one time he was talking to, they had a Dominican working group, and it was a lot of the young kids who from the Dominican Republic. And I don't know, there was like six or seven pitchers there. Pat's in the middle. And they had a guy translating. He didn't need to translate because they understood. Pat was showing them how to cut this. And I just thought, you know, what an art to be able to just walk up to people you don't know and talk about something that's a craft and have them. And all the guys, I had one minor league coach tell me one time that he said, I would be willing to bet. Now, this was, I don't know if Pat's role has changed. This was under the previous regime. It was actually Sal Fasano told me. He said, I'd be willing to bet that at some point this spring, Pat will have talked to every one of our minor league pitchers, at least a little bit. He'll have sidled up them and said, hey, what do you throw? What's your out pitch? What are you working on? And God, it's such a great natural resource. And I've said this time and time again. At some point, somebody's going to make Pat Henkin a manager, and he's going to be one of the best managers.
Well, it is. The one thing that stood out to me is whenever he said he would walk in the outfield if he was the manager up to Drew Storen and say, ask him how he's doing. Hey, I'm still going to go to you in big spots. Yep. I haven't forgotten about you. I'm not giving up on you. It's a vote of confidence. Yeah. That's, even at this level, people need confidence. Somebody every once in a while just needs to hear it. Yeah. And. Well, you know, when you're struggling, it's hard to hear.
It's a sport that allows for a lot of communication. It's a sport. I mean, there's a lot of standing around, right? There's a lot of time. There's a lot of standing around. And I think it goes where Pat kind of learned the value of that, and he'll tell you this, is very early in his career, he suspected he was tipping pitches. Robbie Alomar, and I think I've told this story here, mm-hmm. Robbie Alomar came up to him, tapped him on the shoulder, said, come on the outfield with me for a minute. He went in the outfield with Robbie Alomar. Nobody around. And he said, Alomar said, this is what you're doing when you throw this. I can see it from here. And I know Pat's always said that, always stuck with him. Just that very simple one-on-one, hey, I just noticed this.
Mm-hmm.
And as Pat said, you know, you come away from that, and he walked away. He's going, man, guy, great player, just kind of showed me something that I can use this tonight.
Right.
It's going to make me better tonight. So I think there's a lot to be said for being able to have that one-on-one relationship and approach people and build up their confidence, but at the same time plant something in their head that suggests they have to do something.
And
better.
He makes it simple. Basically, all he's saying the bullpen
guy is
down and away. That's it.
Basically, he was saying go and don't give up runs. That's all. Just however you
down
do
and away.
Yeah.
If they beat you the other way, tip your hat, and then you can go. After the game and say, hey, I was down and away all the time. Yep. He just beat me.
Yep. Perfect. It's Baseball Central with Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker. We will take a look around Major League Baseball, get you set for tonight's game between the New York Yankees and the Blue Jays. Ari Dickey against Nathan Eovaldi. Baseball Central, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. On demand. On demand. On demand. On demand. Now, back to more Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Learn something new every day. I didn't even know we're on a network, apparently. We're on a network. Mm. We should be better. Hang on.
It's terrible.
Damn earphones.
Why don't you get off your wallet
and buy
yourself?
I'm going to buy my own.
You're in the studio
We're not in TV, so I could buy those big-ass Beats headphones. You know, the big ones?
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Yeah, the one that had the antenna on it.
My tinfoil hat, it'd be perfect.
Nice.
Let's talk basketball.
You need to cheer up today. You know
let's
that?
Talk basketball. It was a bad day.
Raptors were great yesterday.
Let's talk basketball. How about soccer?
Ooh.
Jose Mourinho?
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
Shut up, Jeff.
Never gets old.
Yeah, actually, it does. Speaking of getting old, R.E. Dickey's on the... No.
Hey.
That's not good. Blue Jays and Yankees tonight, first of three games from the Bronx. 7 o'clock first pitch. Shulman, Martinez, and Davis. That's what it says right here, TV. They'll have the call on Sportsnet Ontario. Howarth, Siddle, and Wilner on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And immediately following the game, young Mr. Mike Wilner will talk you off the ledge on the Blue Jays talk.
Think positive.
We got baseball at noon on Sportsnet Ontario. Jake Odorizzi against Tom Koehler or Kohler. Where I come from, K-O-E-H-L-E-R, we'd be pronounced Koehler, but I mean, I'm sure he probably pronounces it Kohler. It'll be the Rays against the Marlins this afternoon. The Marlins 23-21, the Rays 20-22. You wanted to talk about Clayton Kershaw, and I don't know why. Nothing's changed. He's still pretty damn good. Get a load of this. Clayton Kershaw, this year, you know, of course, he's 7-1. He threw a two-hit shutout in a 1-0 win over the Reds. Damn it, I got to check this online. Clayton Kershaw, I believe, has thrown more. Of course, the internet's crapped out here. Clayton Kershaw, I believe, has thrown more shutouts this month than he's walked batters. I think he's got two walks.
Let's say he has one walk.
Either way. 3-2, I was right.
There you go.
There you go.
First time ever.
How do you do that?
I don't know.
How do you go? Shout out to you're pitching 9 innings. You don't walk any. How do you do that?
You know what? You know
how come he never has a problem with the strike zone?
You know what it is. Well, the thing that I saw, and you talk about guys getting team swing happy early in games. You saw when he came here and faced the Blue Jays.
Okay, what
he
is
threw,
that?
He threw nothing but fastball
okay, what
in
does that
one
mean?
Through nine. The first
what does
time through
mean?
The lineup.
Because I've heard other people describe that swing happy.
Yeah, well,
what does that mean?
That means you're always around the plate early in the count and with a pitch that has a little bit of movement on it. He was throwing a lot of cutters in
mm-hmm.
to the Blue Jays hitters because he wanted to get guys out later in the game with all speed pitches away. That's how he does it. And he does it better than anybody else. He threw mainly fastballs to the Blue Jays the first time through. 2015, you would have laughed at that. Even with Clayton Kershaw, there's no chance you're doing that. Left-handers coming to the Rogers Center and doing that to the Blue Jays. That's how he does it. He does it with movement, meaning he's throwing it in there with a little bit of that late giddy up
mm-hmm.
on a cutter. And that's how he gets you swing heavy. He gets you swinging first, and then he starts spinning that 78-mile-an-hour breaking ball and that slider he's added. It's unfair right now. He throws back foot slider to right-hander. He throws that slow breaking ball on any count. He throws a cutter, and he goes fastball down and away.
There was some bad news for Clayton Kershaw last night. He struck out 7 Reds, thus ending his franchise record streak of 6 straight 10 strikeouts.
That's awful.
And you know, remember a couple of weeks ago when was it Jonah Carey or somebody? And I was mocking you because
yes.
you asked about Sandy Cove. Yeah,
say you're sorry.
I'm not sorry. Bartolo Colon, this is a great story. Allowed one run over 7 innings pitched in a 7-1 win over the Nationals. And according to the Associated Press, at the plate, and this is why pitchers hitting it again. The stupidest thing. There are two things that are horrible about sports. NBA officiating and pitchers hitting.
I want this guy to hit though.
So Bartolo Colon at the plate tells Wilson Ramos, the Nationals catcher, he wasn't going to swing.
No.
Quote, I swing at the balls pretty hard and I thought, not worth making my back worse, so I told their catcher from the beginning, just throw it right down the middle. I'm not swinging. After that first at-bat and they threw me that changeup, I was like, no, I promise you, throw it right down the middle. I am not going to swing. Do you believe that?
Yes.
Because it's Bartolo Colon.
And I played with him in the winter ball, shocker. That's him. He is one of the funniest, most fun people to be around you'll ever meet in your life.
What's the most remarkable trait of Bartolo Colon?
He gets people out with 86.
Pretty remarkable. He is, you know, we joke about him, but he's God, he is.
He's
fun
an
to
athlete
watch.
Too. You'd laugh right. when you say athlete.
No, he is an athlete,
straight up.
Hey, there are fat athletes around. I'm serious.
He is very, very good.
What else happened? I already talked about Carson Smith. Josh Hamilton's out for the year after electing to undergo knee surgery. Alex Gordon of the Royals out 3 to 4 weeks. The fractured scaphoid bone in his right wrist. Lucas Duda is on the DL with a stress fracture in the lower back. The Mets first baseman. I'm going to go out on a limb here. Going to go out on a limb right here. If the Jays fall out of it, you're going to hear Edwin Encarnacion to Mets rumors. Throwing that out there. And trust me, that's from a pretty good source.
Can't argue that.
Kevin Kiermaier is out 8 to 10 weeks for Hanser. That's just a shame. I said, Twitter that, Kevin Kiermaier is one of the five players I like. I just love watching play.
Speed. You don't see speed every day now. Nobody. It's very hard to stay on the field when you're fast.
Yep.
Because you're always stealing bases. You're running through walls. Look at Pilar.
Mm-hmm.
And Pilar's not fast, really.
8 to 10 weeks. Wow.
It looked nasty. You saw it?
I did see it. It was awful.
Turned away from the TV.
I'll tell you what also looked awful was, we didn't talk about this, Jason Hayward's catch. I don't know if you saw Hayward's catch and...
Up against the fence in the outfield.
No, it looked to me like he broke his leg the first time because the leg was at an odd angle. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, he's fine. But yeah, Lucas Duda, DL with the stress fracture. The Rangers lost Shin-Soo Choo with the strained hamstring. And Drew Stubbs with a sprained left pinky toe to the disabled list. That's important. Why? Because the man I said was going to be Rookie of the Year in the American League, Joey Gallo, is coming up to the Texas Rangers. Texas Rangers, folks, are going to the World Series.
Whoa. People in Toronto just gave you the number one sign.
That's right. It's like trolling people. What do you expect from R.A. Dickey tonight?
Seriously, you asked me these questions.
Yeah,
like
true. Well, you said no. It's a good ballpark.
Okay,
down and away. He has no idea. He could try to throw the ball down and away. Boy. You don't control the knuckleball.
Can we stop talking about the pitchers and start talking more about hitting? I expect the hitters tonight to get healthy and start. Playing to the field.
What does that mean? Oh, you mean playing?
Right field's very short. If you're right-handed and they're throwing you away, hey.
I thought you were talking field, like horse racing field.
Nice and easy. Get the bat head out there and just tappy.
Well, you'd think these guys had a pretty good memories of Yankee Stadium. They had a pretty good series there to end the season last year. I think you're right. I think that short right field porch. When you look at the guys that are scuffling in this team, it's the right-handed hitters, basically. Are scuffling in this team. You know, because most of them, like Batista, well, he's not really scuffling, but Donaldson, Edwin, the guys that are scuffling are right-handed hitters. They got that short right-hand porch, should help.
It's not going to hurt.
Go the opposite way.
Yeah.
Go to the opposite way, especially if you're being pitched.
You know what thinking that means?
Down and away. Now I'm thinking down and away all day.
That short porch, and you're trying to hit it over there, that means you let the ball travel. You see the ball longer, you make harder contact.
Yep.
Ding, 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 ding.
Ding, 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 ding.
I mean, the light switch just went on and bulb and...
Okay.
I don't know.
All right.
That's what I'm going to go with. Now you're facing a guy that throws 100.
Yep. Nathan Eovaldi, that'll be fun.
I don't know.
We got to talk about this. The family of Tony Gwynn is filing a wrongful death lawsuit in the San Diego Superior Court against Altria Group Corporation, the parent company of Philip Morris and U.S. Smokeless Tobacco Company, LLC. It's a amazingly complicated story. Craig Calcaterra, our friend at NBC Sports, pointed out to a news story on this, a detailed news story on this. It's really something. But I wanted to mention that anyhow. You didn't? Did you ever chew?
No,
you never did you?
No. Thank goodness.
Sometime I'll tell you the story about Mike Scott, not Mike Scott, Tim Scott of the Montreal Expos. Made me the type of chew that he normally had in a game, bubblegum chewing and sunflower seeds.
Oh.
Barfed all over the true story. I barfed all over the field. It was just awful.
I'd pay to see that.
For Pat Henkin and Kevin Barker, I'm Jeff Blair. You probably would pay to see that. You know what? You may still pay to see it. Thanks so much for joining us in Baseball Central. Have a great day, everybody.